Is all this gosh dang nostalgia making our movies and TV shows worse? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers, of the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, nostalgias, West Side Stories, all of that. With me today, as always, is Roxy Stryer. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Lon Harris.
Hey, everybody.
Say hi, Roxy, so the kids know that you're there.
I like Lon's "hey, everybody." It sounds kind of like a Disney. What are the Mickey Mouse, Goofy, Daffy? What are all they called?
Yeah, Daffy. Yeah, Daffy Duck.
Who could Daffy. Forget Daffy Duck? Daffy. Donald. Donald. Daffy is Daffy Bugs' Donald. Friend. Donald is Mickey's friend.
Oh, Donald. What are totally they all different called? Ducks. They're called Mickey's and Friends. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, they usually say like Mickey and Friends. Yeah. Is what they yeah. call that
you
roster.
You sound like an Anne friend.
Yeah, there you go.
You're one of the friends.
Hey,
you're
one everybody.
I'd be like one of those, you know, like dog, rodent, cat in between guys that Disney's such a big fan of.
Yeah, those are like, what is that?
Well, Dolphy.
You're Dolphy.
Yeah. I'm definitely Dolphy. Yeah, where it's like they like Goofy's a dog and Pete's a cat, but then Pluto's also a dog. It's like, what's going
Wait,
on?
Wait, is Pluto supposed to be a cat?
Pete, you know,
Pete,
like yeah,
sorry,
right,
Pete.
Yes. Yeah,
Pluto. Right. Wow. Okay. Yeah, mixing my metaphors.
But yeah, no, if you look it up like on a wiki or something, yeah, like Pete, his neighbor is a cat.
Wow. I guess that makes sense because he's a mouse, so they're natural enemies.
No, not, yeah, right. Mickey's a mouse. Yeah. He, like, and that's the cartoon hierarchy, you know, mouse, cat, dog. I mean, we're right in there. But they had a cow too, right? Clarabelle.
Clarabelle.
Is that a Disney thing as well?
So
she
actually,
wouldn't mouse be lowest on the totem pole?
Not in Walt's world. In Walt's world, mouse up top.
You listen, Walt Disney was all about taking the little guy and elevating the little guy. That was all. That was Walt's whole thing. You don't even need to look at his history. That's what he was about.
And then Oswald was a rabbit. I don't even know how that works.
Yes.
Very confusing.
Yes, very confusing.
Not sure Walt really understood the vagaries of the animal kingdom, honestly.
I think we can all agree that Looney Tunes was a lot more, its animal kingdom made a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's more like real world. It's like, okay, a duck, a rabbit. Yeah, natural enemies of the hunter. Like, it's more of a like relatable worldview. Whereas Disney is like, some of them are living in cities and wearing clothes, and some of them are their pets of those ones, and it's like what's going on.
It's chaos. But listen,
this
is not what we're talking about today. We're not talking about
is it not? I prepared 50 minutes of material on this.
We are talking today about nostalgia because we've had a lot of nostalgic things come out and it's been on my brain, and so I hit up Roxy and I hit up Lon. I was like, hey, this is what I want to talk about. Ooh, for those watching live, here's my dog. She's not able to take a hint right now that we're recording.
Well, I feel like both of you guys were talking about animals so much. Lon's animal went behind him. Your animal came into the room.
Yeah, they just wanted
no
to be included.
To show because I'm alone.
Roxy, get yourself an animal. Get yourself an animal.
You got to adopt.
I can't keep a plant alive, DJ.
But animals are so much easier.
Yeah, they'll remind you. Yes. Like, they'll be like, hey, I'm hungry. And you're like, oh, right. That's right. Yeah,
that's the thing. And, you know, they basically, plants work on their own system. Animals work essentially the same as we are. You feed them a couple times a day. You make sure they go poop and pee and you're fine.
And if you forget, they will still go poop or pee. They'll just do it up in your business instead of outside on the ground.
Who would have guessed? A dog is low maintenance and a plant is high maintenance. I never knew.
Yeah, I can't figure out plants, but I've figured out the dog. But if we're mentioning watching this live, perfect segue. Thank you, Winona. If you want to watch this live, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. And that is also where you can check out our new Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity, where I talk about the Spider-Man movies with our friend of the show, Sal from Comic Pop. You can also review this show on iTunes, please and thank you. Go give us 5 stars. We also ask you questions on Spotify. If you listen on Spotify, last week's question was, who is your favorite Avenger so far? It was an episode on Hawkeye. So originally the question was going to be, who's the worst Avenger? And I thought that was too negative. So I went with, who's your favorite Avenger so far? Hunter Bear said, with this show, Hawkeye is really beginning to grow on me. Maybe that's my short-term memory. Maybe it's cool to see someone who is literally just some guy make a difference. Stephanie Raposo says, gotta go with Iron Man. Rashid J. Harris says Thor. And Stormy Woods says Captain America. So we got the full Marvel Trinity in there. But
before, who's your guys?
Lon, do you have like a favorite Avenger?
Are we counting all of the Guardians as Avengers or just like the main core crew?
I think that's a good question because after Infinity War, like the implication is like everyone's an Avenger now.
Right. Because I have to say, Drax as a character is like one of consistently my favorite characters in the whole MCU. So I'm tempted to just go right there. But I get like overall contribution to the team, core of the team. I probably would go Thor on this one.
There you go. Thor, Roxy, favorite Avenger.
Well, it's kind of sad though, because isn't Drax the only one who doesn't really like his character?
I thought that was weird too. Batista did have this complaint where he's like, oh, just stand around and say like dumb things. It's like, he's one of the funniest people in like the entire franchise. I think like I've always, that was the character that made me go, oh, Dave Bautista's really good. I like him in movies.
For me, the Dave Bautista breaking point was Blade Runner 2049. When I saw him in that, I'm like, oh God, Dave Bautista. Killing it.
I feel like I was already on board by then because he was Drax. Like yeah. I didn't know him from like, I'm not a wrestling guy. So yeah. Like I didn't really know that much about him other than like that big dude who wrestles until he started showing up in movies.
Roxy, favorite Avenger.
Wanda.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We know this. We've talked about this. Yeah. I think for me,
a fish called Wanda.
The fish called
Jamie
Wanda.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
I think for me, it is probably Sam Wilson. We're kind of doing it with Hawkeye, but I think before Hawkeye, Sam Wilson was the, like, I like to refer to him as like the Zettermore of the Avengers. Like he's just, he's just here to do a job. Like he doesn't have a super soldier serum. He's not a billionaire. He's just some dude that got roped into the Avengers and he's going to make the best of it. And I find that pretty relatable.
It is. He's like braver. Thor is a god. So him going into those battles is like, well, this is what's expected of you. It's like the least you can do. Sam Wilson's got like two guns and a jetpack. Yes. He's just a guy. Yeah,
he's just a guy.
You have to respect it. Yeah.
He's just a guy. So before we get into our discussion today about nostalgia, we like to start every episode talking about what we are into this week. Lon, you are our guest today. And you host, before we even do that, we haven't even had a chance for you to talk about where people can find you, what you're up to, where they might know you from, what they should be checking out.
What are you up to, Lon?
Tell us what you're up to.
A lot of the same stuff I've been up to. I'm doing a podcast with Hal Rudnick called Binge Boys, where we watch whatever is streaming that week. So definitely got some things I can recommend to you guys in a few minutes here. I'm still writing for Screen Junkies and Fandom and Honest Trailers. Of course, those come out every Tuesday. We do a commentary, which you can watch over there. I write a streaming newsletter for Inside. So if you want to read my thoughts on everything going up on the web, that's inside.com/streaming is where you can check that out. And then Video Drew from the Schmodown and I, Drew Grant, we do a podcast together as well for Her Network Content Candy. So you can look that up wherever you find podcasts.
You're everywhere. That's all the places.
That's a good amount of things.
Really check out the description for links. Yeah, if you can keep going.
I know, that's okay. That's fine.
So you mentioned Binge Boys. So you said, you got a lot to recommend. What are you into? What are you watching that you want to share with the class today?
Have you seen that there's a couple Korean shows that I got into post Squid Game. I feel like both the streaming services got on this like, we're going to throw Korean content at you. And I got like more interested in seeing what kind of shows were out there. So I'm watching one on Netflix called Hellbound, which is by the same guy who did Train to Busan.
It's
a little bit like Korean Leftovers. The idea is like all of the sudden people start getting like a face that looks like a ghost or an angel's face, like appears above them and says like, you're going to die in a week and you're bound for hell. And then at the moment of the prediction, like demons rise out of the ground and like grab you and like pummel you and kill you and drag you down to hell. And this just starts happening like all over the world one day. And but it's not, the show's not really about that. It's about how humanity reacts to it. And like this cult rises because it tries to like explain what's happening and people are like investigating, trying to figure it out. It's really interesting and it does not go where I sort of expected.
That sounds really interesting to me because I do kind of like the idea of when dealing with like spiritual or supernatural things, like the truth is if it were to happen, we wouldn't know the backstory of it would just start happening. And then we'd have to be like, but what, why though? Why is this going on now?
Yeah. I feel like
two questions.
Shoot.
Number one, this is live action.
It's live action. It's on, it's a 6-episode, like first season of the show. It's on Netflix now. Yeah.
And number two, you know how Leftovers, which I am assuming you finished.
Yes.
I don't know if we've spoken about it since it's been done. I think at some
point.
Time.
Yeah. You and I definitely at least briefly discussed it before.
So do you think it's like that where you're never going to know why somebody is the person with the thing?
Yeah, I think they're definitely playing around with like, this is just a baffling thing. And as people, we don't really understand like the nature of the world and especially this cosmology. And I mean, there's definitely like, it's clearly the first season of a show that they're thinking of more stuff. Like it doesn't end. It ends with like a stay tuned for season two of Hellbound. So they're going to keep deepening and broadening the mystery, but it's definitely less about let's get to the bottom of this and more about, oh, this would make everybody go insane. Like this would ruin the world. If this started to happen, we would all lose our minds and have no idea how to deal with it.
Are some of them kids?
Yes. I mean, part of it is they try to come up with like, oh, well, these people must be bad. Like this is you're a sinner and you're getting, this is God dragging you to hell. But then they start to play around with that idea of like, this person doesn't seem bad. And like that person seems really bad and it's not happening to them. And so like, that's what kind of leads everybody to get like paranoid and crazy and not know what to make of it.
I love this show.
It's a really cool. It's a really cool premise. And you know, it's like, there's that, like in South Korea, it sort of feels like the way that they approach a lot of these premises is just like, just take it. It's less about expectations, like setting expectations and then living up to them, which a lot of American shows, it would be like, well, we have to start explaining the mystery by episode 4 or people will get frustrated. And it feels like in Korea, there's a little bit more storytelling freedom where it's just like, I don't know, man, where do you think this should go? Like, I think this weird thing would happen next.
Well, it's kind of like,
I have to know.
It's kind of like with Squid Game, like, is it episode 2 that they get to, you know, they have the vote, let's put it that way, for people that haven't watched Squid Game. And it's like, yeah, American shows would never do that.
Would never do that. People are like, what? Yeah. Like, right. It's like, they'll throw you curveballs, but not so much of a curveball that it's like, I don't know what to make of this. And it feels like, yeah, there's just, you know, like that's, it's a different approach to that kind of storytelling over there.
So that's one of the standout for you, standouts for you when it comes to like binge boys. So you have to like, are you like watching everything basically?
I try to watch a lot of stuff. My rule is like, I'll give everything 2 or 3 episodes. And if I'm not into it by then, I just put it aside and like move on to the next thing. Cause I just got like, there's too much to get through. I can't finish everything, but, yeah, I try to give everything like a fair shot. So I don't get to everything because obviously there's just not enough time, but yeah. I try to get in as much as I can week to week, just so in conversations like this, I feel prepared with like, you know, I've seen the big stuff everybody wants to talk. Like I haven't missed Wheel of Time, so I can talk about that. But I've also seen some more like odds and ends, obscure things.
So I haven't checked out Wheel of Time yet. Roxy, have you seen Wheel of Time, the Amazon Prime show?
No.
Lon, how is it? What are we dealing with here? Is it any good? Is it worth checking out?
No, I'm really enjoying it so far. It's interesting because people keep comparing it to Game of Thrones for obvious reasons. Right. Yeah. It's like trying. Jeff Bezos even specifically said like, get me a Game of Thrones, you know, like I'm imagining him like pounding his desk. Yes. Like I want 5 Game of Thrones at my desk by 5. Mm-hmm.
And in their advertisement, they said this was Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones.
Right. So. And it's interesting because Game of Thrones, like so much of the bit is upend every expectation and trope of fantasy, you know, like, oh, you think it's going to be about the good family conquering evil, but we're going to murder them all. Or like, oh, you think that it's about the Lord of Light is going to come save the day. And it's like, we're not even sure he exists, you know, like, and it's all that. And Wheel of Time is like straight up just like, it's a Tolkien-esque story that's like similar, changing some stuff. It's really in that mold, and it's not trying to upend expectations. It's just trying to like deliver what those fans want.
Yeah.
But as a riff on those kinds of ideas, it's pretty good. Like, it's well done, and it's obviously hugely elaborate and like gorgeously, massively produced. Like, they threw unlimited funds at it, so it looks great.
Well, Bezos has those funds. He has those.
Yeah, they destroy funds. Like, they built this huge village and then destroyed and like the pilot. Like, money was no object. They will literally go to like a whole huge town for one scene and then be like, "All right, we're done here." And it's like, you built that stable just for this 2 minutes of screen time? That's crazy.
Wild.
The employees could have taken pee breaks and with that money.
I miss watching things as a kid and not thinking about things like that. Because when I'm watching things as an adult and being somebody in the industry, that's all I can notice.
Yeah.
And it is so frustrating as an independent filmmaker looking at things like that. And it's like, if I had the budget of that 2 minute scene for a 90 minute movie, yes. I'd be famous.
Yes.
Yeah. No, there's literally a scene in the pilot where they're in like this smithing, like a blacksmith's setup. And it's incredibly intricate and detailed. It looks beautiful. Like, they spent hours just making all the little details look right and building all the little things to go on the walls and everything. And then the whole town is destroyed at the end of the episode. So it's like, even if we go back there, it'll be like seasons from now and they'll have to do it again. It's like, it's unthinkable. This, you know, it's like hundreds of millions of dollars just on this. So on that level, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It feels very Tolkien-y so far.
I'll have to check it out just for that. If you want to know more about what Roxy and I are into, we're going to be doing that in the after show, which is going to be over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. I will say,
I got good ones.
Oh, we got some good ones. I will say, just as a tease of that, Lon, have you ever checked out The Expanse?
Oh, the Amazon show. I have it.
Okay.
No, I know it's supposed to be great.
It's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. And I got screeners for the sixth and final season, the whole season. It's great. It's great. And it's just, it really sticks the landing. And I really, anybody that likes sci-fi or anybody that likes stuff that shows that like take themselves more seriously and think about like the real world ramifications of some of their more heightened scenarios. The Expanse is really, really, really fantastic. And soon, but at the end, the season six starts at the end in December. And like by the end of December or like early January, the whole show will be on Amazon. So you can just watch the whole thing. But yeah, so that, I'll talk more about that in the after show on Patreon. Before we get move forward in the chat today, we've got some of our audience talking about what they are into. Kayla Marie is into Encanto, which emotionally wrecked me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I started Young Justice, which is so good. OMG. Leonard Kim is watching Hawkeye, Man in the Arena, Wheel of Time, Cowboy Bebop, Arcane, Sex Lies of College Girls, Star Trek Discovery, Swagger, Acapulco, and tons of sports.
I've heard great stuff about that Swagger show. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but that's coming up soon in my queue.
That's
on Apple TV Plus. It's with O'Shea Jackson Jr. It's like a basketball phenom and his like rise through the high school ranks trying to be in the NBA, but it's supposed to be great.
That sounds great.
Great stuff.
And then Glenn Caesar says he's watched King Richard, Hawkeye Part 1, Beatles Doc, Wheel of Time series, AEW Wrestling, NBA, and NFL. So that
Oh my God, have you guys watched that Beatles Doc? I'm obsessed with it.
No.
I might watch it again. It's like 9 hours and I might watch it again. That's
okay. Well, it's Peter Jackson, right?
I mean, it's Peter Jackson, yeah. But it's weirdly immersive. Like, it looks like it's in HD, like it was shot yesterday, and it's so like slow, and it, you know, you just get sucked into it, and it really feels like sitting in this studio with the Beatles while they made this album. It's incredible.
That's wild. And that's on Disney Plus. Yeah.
That's on Disney Plus. Yeah. That whole thing is up now. Three episodes. They're like 3 hours each though. Legitimately.
Oh my God. Well, of course, that's what I said. It's Peter Jackson. It's like, there's no such thing as too much when it comes to Peter Jackson.
And a lot of it is just them sitting around like smoking cigarettes, eating toast. They're obsessed with toast. Every scene is like they're being brought these huge trays of toast and marmalade, drinking tea, eating toast. And
I really like toast. I think it's underrated.
Yeah, who doesn't like?
I mean, it's talk about toast enough.
Toast is delicious. It's just amazing that these were like the four richest and most famous men on earth at this time and could have been asking for like anything. And tea and toast is like all
was their jam. Tea and toast and cigarettes was their jam.
And cigarettes. That's all they really wanted.
Well, next we are going to talk about nostalgia. But before we do that, we're going to go on a quick ad break where the ads might be about tea and toast and cigarettes. Who knows? Who's to say? Here's the ads. Hey, everybody, real quick, I want to talk to you about Secondhand Memories, a nerdy book of poetry by Joseph Bonaldi that uses myths to talk about identity and the fallibility of memory. Poems include a homeless angel begging for laundry money to keep his robes white, old man Robin Hood looking back at his life and realizing he is full of regrets from pursuing legacy instead of happiness, and surrealist life experiences like selling your life at a yard sale. Here's the official summary. Memories are the stories we tell ourselves to make sense of who we are, half-truths and false narratives mixed together to create something more honest than reality. Is Robin Hood truly a legend if all he remembers is regret? What is the value of a man who sells his life at a yard sale? This collection of poetry jumbles myth and autobiography together to say something truer than either could on their own, that life is made up. Identity is what you make of it, and nothing is more real than the stories we tell. You can grab this book at Amazon right now, and there is a link in the description of this very episode. Joey is a longtime friend of the show, and he is a Hellbent backer. He chose the tier to advertise on this very show, and I am excited to tell you about his book. So go do yourself a favor. Click that link, look for Secondhand Memories on Amazon, and check it out. All right, everybody, we are back from that beautiful, glorious ad. Let us know if it was about toast. I can tell you it wasn't. It was not. But now we are talking about nostalgia, and you're like, why? And it's like, because it's literally everything right now. So just this week, I saw West Side Story. I'm going to be talking about a little bit that, about that, spoiler-free, in the after show.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. It hurts.
We've got a new Ghostbusters movie. We've got a new Cowboy Bebop show on Netflix. We've got the announcement that they're continuing the X-Men animated series from when I was a kid. And so I just wanted to talk to you all a little bit about how you feel about all the nostalgia we're getting, because here's the concern I have with seeing all of this. It feels like, to me, culturally, we're abdicating any ability to like look forward to imagining any future for ourselves. Like, things are so shitty that it seems to be our default is like, well, let's just go back. Let's just go. Don't worry about doing new things. Let's just keep going back and doing the old things. Like, somebody watched Ready Player One. This is all lumped together with meta for me. Watch Ready Player One, and instead of being like, oh, that's a goddamn nightmare, they're like, yeah, let's do this.
I think that's part of it. I think there is a fatalism to it of like, you know, everything good was from the past and we should just look back there. But I also think you got to think about the impact of like globalization on all this, like culture, pop culture and films and shows and this stuff. It used to be made with a more culturally specific audience in mind. Yeah. And now everything is made for everybody. And so it has to be way more broad and it has to have way more global appeal immediately. And like, well, how do you do that? Well, you put recognizable stuff that everybody already knows in it. So like, it's hard to sell a comedy overseas or to like mass audiences, young and old alike. But it's easier to sell that comedy if you're like, but look, the Ghostbusters are in it. You know who the Ghostbusters are. So I think that's a big part of it. It's why a lot of entertainment has kind of gotten like smoothed out and blander. Yeah. Because it's just like, it's not enough to get 30 million people to think something is amazing and awesome. You have to get 300 million people. You have to get 3 billion people on board to make a profit in 2021.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point, because Lon, you said when we were talking about the show, you've not seen the new Ghostbusters yet, right?
No, I will admit I had an opportunity to, and I feel like it's going to make me sad. So I've been a little bit avoiding it.
I think Roxy and I would support that decision. Not everybody. Some people
People loved it.
I know a lot of people loved it, but I feel like, and I don't mean that like I've said this, people have gotten a little upset with me. I don't mean this negatively. I'm not criticizing you if you liked it. Everybody likes that. I'm sure I like stuff you don't like. I don't mean this in a pejorative way. But I feel like the people who liked it, just their Ghostbusters is different from my Ghostbusters. Like, when I think of Ghostbusters, it's this blue-collar snobs versus slobs 80s comedy. And that's what I love about it.
Yes.
It's like, they're acting like jaded, cynical, shitty plumbers, and they're going into people's houses who are annoyed with them. Like, the whole movie is really that scene where they go to the fancy hotel and the guy's like, $5,000? I won't pay it. And they're like these disgusting guys with cigarettes hanging out of their mouth, threatening to like unleash a ghost in the ballroom.
Yes.
And so making it like Amblin, Spielberg teens on a family adventure, like, I get the appeal of that stuff. I loved the Goonies as a kid, like anybody, but it just doesn't feel Ghostbusters-y to me at all. Like, it feels like totally a different genre and style than the original. And like, I don't know, that kind of, it bums me out.
Well, I think you clocked a lot of Roxy and Mai's criticism of it without having seen it. But I think that goes
almost like you were next to us, Lon.
I could tell. I mean, as soon as the trailer was like Finn Wolfhard in a car in like a cornfield, I was like, what? That's Ghostbusters, it's so New York. It's like the most New York thing in the world, Ghostbusters.
Well, and but I think
this one.
Not this one at all.
Like, what if kids on a farm? Like, what is that, just Stranger Things?
But like, you're right, because like Ghostbusters is this like lumpy, kind of unusual, kind of like thing, something that's clearly hard to recreate. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so trying to make it into this thing that's like mass producible. But that goes to to another question of like, you made the point, you know, we're trying to get more the globally on board. It's like, yeah, but do people like Cowboy Bebop's on Netflix? Are people in China obsessed with Cowboy Bebop? Like, or the new the X-Men 97 cartoon? Like, I love that cartoon when I was a kid.
Me too.
Yeah, it was a big fan. And then, for I think right when Disney Plus launched, Sam and I were doing a rewatch thing. We rewatched a few episodes, and parts of it are great, and other parts of it are not. it's not. And so it makes me wonder, like, why not just do a new X-Men cartoon?
So, okay, I'm gonna get real with you guys for a second. I'm going very psychoanalyzing on this for 1 minute.
Let's do it.
I remember several years ago talking to my therapist and her saying to me that one of the main things in common with people who have depression is a longing for the past, mm-hmm. a longing to get back to the past, because you either are looking at something through rose-colored glasses, or when you're thinking about like, it was a better time. And often it wasn't a better time. Often you just feel like it was a better time. And I think that we are going through a global depression right now.
Yeah.
We're going through a time in which people haven't been allowed to leave their houses in 2 years. And the Lon and I of the world who are solo dolo are like losing our shit. I don't know if you're losing your shit, Lon. I'm losing my shit.
Yeah, for sure.
And everybody else, people who have lost their jobs, people who have lost their livelihood, people who have lost their family members and not been able to say goodbye. You guys know you lived through the panini just like I did. So, when we're still living in it. And so I do feel like, especially now, we don't even have the mental capacity to look forward. We have no effing idea what that is. So creators, who are some of the most sensitive people on the planet, and I don't say sensitive is a bad thing, I say it just as in like in touch, I think that a lot of creators right now are not even able to look forward. They just want that nostalgia. And if what we're talking about is like tapping back into those things, I'm not saying we're doing it in a way that's healthy or creatively fulfilling, but I think that's where it's coming from right now, where it's not out of laziness. It's not out of like, I just don't want to do the work. I just think people are wishing that we were in a different time and they don't know how to create a new time. So they're just trying to go back to the old time.
Yeah, I totally totally agree with that. I think two things I would add. One, there is this idea, you're right, that it's easier somehow. Like, to write a new Ghostbusters movie is easier than coming up with your own idea. You know, there's always that, like, oh, they're out of ideas. Just do another Ghost. It's harder. Like, coming up with your own original story would be a lot easier than trying to please everybody who loves classic Ghostbusters while also reinventing it for a new generation and being faithful to all the storytelling things that, like, Dan Aykroyd was just throwing out ideas for the original one. It didn't have to conform to all kinds of other backstory and stuff that it was inheriting. So it's harder. Like, it's not easier. And that idea that it's just laziness makes no sense. Like, it's really tough to constantly reinvent old things in ways that feel fresh and new, as opposed to just everybody who becomes a writer wanted to write their own stories, not retell someone else's, like, on a fundamental level. The other thing I would add, and I totally agree with your point about there is a psychological component to all of this, and it does link up with the fact that we're all basket cases, I think, is that another problem we're seeing is that it's a little bit like drugs. There's, you know, it stops working as well after a while, you know, like if you take the same pill every day, after a week or two, it doesn't have the same impact. Now you got to take two pills or three pills. And I think that we've reached that point with the nostalgia economy where it's like just throwing in a character or two from an old movie isn't enough anymore. We gotta top that. So now you've got movies like Spider-Man No Way Home where it's like, oh yeah, what about 18 characters from all the movies that you loved? And soon enough, even that will not seem crazy enough. And then you got to do, like, we got to do Space Jam, A New Legacy every time. Where it's like, what about every character that the studio owns coming back at one movie? And, like, we can't keep topping ourselves forever. Like, at a certain point, it all just disappears up its own butthole completely, and there's nothing left to tell a story about. So, like, yeah, I think that right now we're already kind of in this cycle of things are just progressing so quickly, and, you know, we're not getting the same buzz off of the nostalgia anymore, and, like, it's gonna break eventually.
Well, and I think you mentioned from a creative perspective, you know, it's hard to kind of, like, thread the needle of pleasing new fans and creating new stuff. But from a business perspective, it is very easy to, like we talked about with Wheel of Time or whatever, like, well, give me a Game of Thrones. Well, give me a, you know what I mean? Like, we could try and figure out what the next Sopranos is, or we could just make a Sopranos prequel and make that a show.
Right.
And move on from that. And I think, like, it concerns me because it feels like our entire culture, not just media, but, like, everything is suffering from a lack of imagination as we look forward to, like, deep existential threats. It's like, well, we could try and figure out an entirely new system that's less extractive and less destructive. Or maybe carbon capture could be a thing, and we could just do the same stuff and not worry. But literally, carbon's the only problem. It's like, well, that's not the only problem. Like, that's not that we're running into a series of crises. And I guess for me, art represents there's an aspirational aspect to art, right? There's an aspirational aspect to what movies and shows and stuff, like, they can show you what is possible. That's a big part of what made Star Trek successful. It's like, hey, what if, you know, the future was good? Like, what if we figured it out? You know what I mean? And so I have concerns that, like, instead of our artists being able to be like, well, here's ways we can improve things. I remember in the height of the George Floyd protests, some artists got together and started reimagining how you could doing conceptual drawings of what police could be, like we get rid of police and we replace them with mental health people, and we replace them with sanitation people, and we replace them with first responders in this way. You know what I mean? And mass global media is not allowing creators to think that way. It's like, well, just give me another Ghostbusters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, I think part of that is just, you know, like what we were talking about before, that it's, if I've got an audience and, you know, some of them are in Argentina and some of them are in Australia, it's just easier to be like, rather than relaunching a mob show. Yeah. Give them, you guys know the Sopranos, everybody knows. So this is another Sopranos. And I think that does make a lot of, like, business sense on a ledger. You're like, this is more of a sure thing. I'm going to invest $100 million in this new series. I want some kind of guarantee that people are going to care about it. And so as that has become the guiding philosophy of the entire industry. Yeah, it's almost impossible. I mean, it's almost impossible in 2021 unless you are someone named like Shonda Rhimes or Tyler Perry or Ryan Murphy. Like, unless your name comes with that level of cred, you don't really get to tell your own stories anymore. It's always like, well, which of these four titles that we're bringing back are of most interest to you? Like, are you more of a Saved by the Bell person, or are you more, you know, like, it's just your choices are Punky Brewster or Doogie Howser or Turner and Hooch, you know, like that's what people, and those are the people who've risen through the ranks to become showrunners. Yeah. Those are their options. Imagine everybody below them or two steps below them or writer's assistants, or none of those people are getting to tell their own stories anymore.
I do think that there is merit in remaking some movies.
Sure. I mean, there are lots of remakes that I like. Yeah. I mean, it's not an anti-remake philosophy. Right. It's just like,
no, I know.
It's a balance. Yeah.
Completely. I'm with you. I think that we all feel the same way, where it's not like, you know, I really like The Star Is Born. Okay. That's the first one that came to my mind.
Yeah.
And I think that it's made every couple decades. I think that's a cute thing. I like it. I like that they redid it. That's fine. And then there's, you know, West Side Story, which is one of my favorite musicals. And I'm so excited to see it. I can't wait to hear you talk about it, DJ. And it sounds like people are really liking it. And then there's the things like Ghostbusters, where I really genuinely felt like, wow, this was a few hours of my life that I'm never going to get back. And could have said that from the initial jump, you know, like the second the concept was pitched, it's like, oh, no, I don't think that's going to work for me. But other people seem to really like it. I also think that creators, their hands are tied a little bit right now, because it is a weird time. I don't know if you guys are in any meetings right now, if you guys are working on any scripts and you guys are coming up with this, hitting the same walls of like, is this with masks on? Is this not with masks on? Do we address that there was a, you know, and like how bogged down do you get in our current climate, whether it is with everything that's gone on with identity politics, or whether it is what's going on with global warming, or whatever, whether it is what's going on with everybody wearing masks. The world actually looks different today. And sometimes maybe you don't want to include that in your art because it's like not fun. Yeah. So I think that people are like, okay, let's try to create something that is escapist. And maybe that is why they keep tapping into the past.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, like when you mentioned Star Is Born, I feel like Star Is Born is one of those things that comes back when everybody, when somebody has like a take, like when they're like, oh, this is how da 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 da. Like, as Lon, you've watched Cowboy Bebop, right?
Yeah.
The new one. I am only in episode 6. And it's very clear that nobody had, like, Netflix was like, we've got this property, let's do live action. And that was the extent of somebody having like a perspective on what this should be.
It really strongly reminds me of a very successful like 2010 YouTube series. Like, you can imagine like Corridor Digital. You remember those guys?
Yes.
Or like somebody like that who was very good at like costumes and effects and the technical elements of filmmaking. And it feels like a challenge. Like, can we recreate the aesthetic and the style of Cowboy Bebop, but with actors in live action? And they're doing a very good job of that. Like, it's very well done, slick. You're like, that does look like a live action version of the Cowboy Bebop world.
Yeah.
But as it's not its own show at all. Like, it doesn't really even feel like an adaptation. It feels like, how can we most closely just like take that and like put it in this other format without messing with it too much? And it's like, on some level, it's just kind of pointless. Like, once you get it that's what they did, and they did a good job of it, you're like, good job. I'm gonna go over here now, watch something else.
Yeah,
like, I've seen this already.
If I never saw the original, would I like this?
I think you'd like it better than if you'd seen the original.
Okay. Yeah,
because probably. There's not, because like it's silly and dumb and cartoony, but then like The Witcher can be pretty silly and dumb, but it's like, it's fun. Like, I have fun watching it. I can imagine somebody watching this and having fun. If you've seen the anime, I am hard pressed to think of a single thing that they adapt from the anime that they don't make slightly worse, that they don't make like a little bit shittier. Like, it's just
it's a fun world. And so I think that no matter how you get into the world of Cowboy Bebop, once you're there, you'd be like, oh, this is a fun world. Like, it's just a clever idea for a setting and characters. And like, it's just fun. And I feel like that comes through in either version.
Yeah.
But the anime is a lot better.
Yeah. The anime is, well, and it's interesting too. It's interesting too. It is a good case study of like how things work in animation and live action, because somehow Obviously, the anime is an anime. There's a lot of heightened elements, but somehow just straight adapting that into live action makes it more cartoony. Like makes it more like, oh well, now this is kind of lame. Like you needed to change it a little bit to make it work in live action.
Right, and I feel like the one thing they did change was they muted all the colors, which is like, no, that's not the thing to
that's
change.
That's the wrong thing to
like,
do.
Like keep the look and the colors right, and just you know make it feel more natural to live action in some way.
Yeah. Why do you think they did that?
I have no idea, but like there's an episode in particular. I think it's the first one where they go to like a planet that's like Mexico.
Yes.
It's like,
it is the first one. It's Mexico planet. Yeah.
Right. Neo Tijuana or something.
Yeah.
And they do the same thing that Earthbound movies do when they go to Mexico, where they throw a yellow brown filter over everything. So we know it's Mexico.
Yeah.
It's dirty and dusty there, folks. And it's like they do the same thing here in the Cowboy Bebop show. It's like, that's not even Mexico. It's like a Mexico-themed planet. It can look like whatever you want. It doesn't have to look like that part of Traffic where we go visit Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
What a dumb decision that was.
Well, and even stuff like, so you cast John Cho as Spike, and John Cho is great. But then you sat on like half of every episode is him just wanting noodles. Like that's suddenly like his thing. Like he's hungry all the time.
Also, you know what I mean? They did a thing. It's the same. Did you guys see Cry Macho that Clint Eastwood?
No.
He's playing a character who was clearly in the book like late 50s, early 60s.
But he's 90.
He's 91. And I don't mind that he wanted to like play the character, but like you gotta rewrite the story so it's about a 91-year-old because he's just playing a guy who's written as 58 and people are like, you didn't show up to work today because you're drunk. It's like, that man is 91. Don't make him come into work. Get him some soup. Take him to a home.
It's like in Tom Cruise's The Mummy where everybody's talking to Tom Cruise as if he's like late 20s, early 30s. Right. And he's like,
and it's just like, I'm not saying don't play that part. I'm just saying rewrite it for you. And that it's the same thing. Like John Cho is older than Spike Spiegel is in the animated Cowboy Bebop.
Yes.
And that is fine, but they should have rethought the character's POV and approach to life based on John Cho being in his 40s because he's not written that way.
Yeah. Anyway, I think the point is when it comes to, we're not necessarily anti-nostalgia or going back, but I do think it is important just from an artistic perspective, because I know the business stuff will always trump the artistic stuff, but from an artistic perspective, having a clear like, oh, this is why we're doing it. Like this is the perspective. It's like as we go through the Spider-Man movies on our Spider-Versity show, the clear impetus of the early Sam Raimi films were, we've never done Spider-Man live action, let's do that, right? That's why those movies exist. But in the writing of it, it becomes about like, they really hit on, okay, great power, great responsibility. That's what these movies are about. Each one is basically a story about Peter learning about responsibility, growing in his responsibility, as opposed to like the MCU films, which are there's a lot of positive things about them. There's a lot of good things, but they're just like, hey, here's another Spider-Man adventure. Here's Spider-Man doing Spider-Man things.
I haven't seen the third one yet, but the first two are so weirdly about the mentor protege relationship. They've really gotten very sidetracked by that in the Tom Holland ones, where it's always about like Spider-Man learning to work with a teacher or learning to like take instruction or guidance or whatever. Yeah. And it's sort of an odd choice.
Yeah. So So the thing is, I would like, and like I'm hoping with this, you know, obviously this is a show, not a movie, but this new like X-Men 97. It's that we're continuing the old thing, but here's why. You know what I mean? Here's what we have to say about that. Even if it's not a reboot, something like Stranger Things. Stranger Things is set in the 80s, but it doesn't have anything to say about the 80s or what that it's purely it's not even set in the 80s, it's set in an 80s movie. Like it's
right,
not,
that's what
like,
I was gonna say. The interesting thing about Stranger Things is more so than a lot of these other projects, it is almost a meta commentary about nostalgia. Like if you like me, I was actually like, I'm pretty close to in age to the Stranger Things characters. Mm-hmm. Like I was their age in that era of the 80s. And like nobody had a The Thing movie one sheet on their wall. That wasn't even, they didn't even really sell movie one sheet posters for your house in the 80s. That wasn't even really a thing. I don't even know where you would buy those. That's a thing we now imagine would have been on an 80s kid's bedroom wall.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of baked into Stranger Things. And I think a way that is purposeful and interesting that is, that really does, I think, set it apart from a lot of these other nostalgia bait shows and films.
Well, let's take another quick ad break, and then we're going to answer some questions we got from the Discord.
Whoa.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back. Let's take a look at some of the stuff we got from the Discord. We got Jake Hefner, who says, do you think with nostalgia content seemingly becoming so much more prevalent nowadays that it'll stifle the process to create anything new? And he brings up, for example, the X-Men 97 show kind of supplanting the idea of making a new X-Men animated series. So do you think this nostalgia is keeping us from getting new stuff? We talked about how, like, Lon, you mentioned how, like, nobody's able to make their own thing. You're just, it's either Punky Brewster or Doogie Howser.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. Like, there would have been a time in, like, the 90s, let's say, where the route to getting into the film industry, you know, if you were a director, you would maybe make a low budget thing, get into festivals. If it did well, you'd get, you know, meetings with studios that they'd be like, pitch us, what are some of the ideas you'd like? And you'd be pitching your own ideas. That same thing happens today, but that filmmaker gets a meeting at the studio and it's like, here are 10 things we're thinking of adapting. Which one do you like? And I mean, like, that's just true. That's just how it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, are you a big fan of Inner Space or would you say prefer Gremlins? You know, it's like you're picking from a catalog of IP that they want to revisit. And I was going to say, too, with Ghostbusters, that's a great example of those Ghostbusters projects specifically keep happening because Sony doesn't really have as much franchise IP as a lot of the other studios. And they're like, racing to catch up. Like Men in Black International kind of fizzled out. Yeah. They don't really know what to do with 21 Jump Street. There's just fewer Sony things out there in the world. And so they're desperate to make Ghostbusters happen and turn it into one of those repeatable cash cows. And that's just the industry now. So yeah, it's totally crowding out other original ideas that probably would otherwise have seen the light of day. Like, unless you're the Russo brothers, you don't get to make one of those anymore.
I'm still genuinely shocked that they haven't tried to make a Ghostbusters or Men in Black live action TV show. Like, it just feels like those premises would work so well in that environment. And it's like, anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, all
been
that
pitched like a bunch of times by somebody in some rooms, and there must be something that they're running into, or it's a not yet kind of thing.
All of those things are coming. I mean, just think about, you know, like Karate Kid is also Sony, and that's exactly what happened. You know, like they made that movie with Jackie Chan, they didn't do any sequels, didn't relaunch the franchise. Then you know, Cobra Kai now is like the big TV show. They're just going to keep doing that as well. You know, Jumanji paid off for them. I'm sure we'll see more stuff in that world. Like, everybody, this is how you become and stay one of these companies at this point.
Do you think, Roxy, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm kind of with Lon on this. Which I guess means being with you.
Do you think,
like, Charlie's Angels, if Charlie's Angels, that Charlie's Angels they made with Kristen Stewart, if that had massively paid off, we'd already have, you know, four of them.
And God damn, that
streaming
movie,
show.
That movie was so fucking horny. That was such a fucking horny movie.
It was
yeah, horny, yeah. Just not a novel concept that, like, people's wallet first. So, like, that's kind of the way that it goes, which is gross, but I also get it.
Roxy.
Of course. I mean, that's the business, you know.
Roxy, do you think there's a point where this kind of thing implodes? Where this thing kind of, like Lon mentioned earlier, that, like, comparing it to like a pill that's like, it's wearing off an effect, like stuff, like we keep doubling down on this stuff and it might not work. The studios keep bidding big.
I'm kind of with Lon on this one too, actually, because actually it's not that surprising.
For once.
I'm on this one too, that when he had said that there's just no way that the bubble doesn't burst kind of thing. I don't know how you can do more than every character that a company owns being thrown into a movie. So we're going to have to find different ways to hold our own beers, because that's what we keep kind of hold my beer. And it's just, yeah, I don't think that can keep going. But I also, again, I don't want to keep just harping on it, but like, we don't know what the F the world's going to look like tomorrow. So it's hard to know what the industry is going to look like. Yeah. I got that Hollywood Reporter email this week, which if you guys are subscribed to it, you guys did too. I'm sure Deadline sent out one, Variety, whoever you guys get them from. And it was like, is Spider-Man going to pull Spider-Man from movie theaters because of Omicron? Mm. It's like, how could we know when this is going to burst or what the future looks like, when like there's a movie coming out in 2 weeks and we're still not sure if it's going to come out. It's doing the same thing.
Yeah. I think, I don't think any movies are going to get pulled, and we're not going to go back into lockdowns. I think Americans have done all that they're going to do.
I don't think so either. But when we're talking about at some point this bursting, the landscape is never been like this before. So who knows even for what reason it bursts.
No, I agree. I just think this nostalgia stuff has it's a law of diminishing returns thing. Like, I just think that it wears off. Those warm, comforting feelings that we all like of being reminded of stuff we loved when we were seven, I think that can only sustain you for so long, really. And eventually people are going to start to crave, you know, other kinds of storytelling and different kinds of stories. And so, you know, I think all of these things are always pendulum swings, and we're at the very, very height of, you know, everything having to be about IP and everything having to be a reboot or a remake. And I think we won't ever probably get out of that world entirely. Like, when people who are kids today are in their 20s, they're going to be very nostalgic for, you know, MCU content and like this era of Star Wars content, and all those things will have another heyday. But I do think, you know, there will probably be a pendulum swing in the other direction where we'll get some more, you know, some different kinds of genres will maybe pop up. Like, heist movies are also kind of having a moment. So you never know. Like, there's room for other stuff.
It goes back to the money thing too. Yeah. When stuff stops making the money, they're going to change the formula. Yeah. So at some point when we get tired of things,
these nostalgia sequels will stop performing as well, and it'll be something else.
Yeah. And it's,
they've been saying that about superhero, and that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Well, because I don't ever think it's that. I think people are always wrong about that stuff because they go too broad, you know, where it's like, like, obviously in the 90s, disaster movies were a huge fad and much more dominant at the box office. But it's not like disaster movies went away.
Yeah.
Greenland, Moonfall, they still come out all the time. I can't wait for friggin' Moonfall. Are you kidding? So I mean, it's just a trend. And I think that even if the superhero trend peters off a bit, it's not like superheroes are friggin' going anywhere. Yeah. And this idea that one day it's just going to crater and there will be no more big superhero movies is like dumb. Of course not.
Well, and it's also important to keep in mind a couple things. One, it's not like the nostalgia stuff is new. So like, for me growing up, a few things I watched is like, I would watch, because of my parents' interest, I would watch Andy Griffith, which as a kid, I didn't have the wherewithal to realize that that was a show made in like the 50s or 60s that was nostalgic for the 30s. And you watch like Happy Days, which as a kid, you're like, oh yeah, the 50s, not knowing that it was made like in decades later, again, being looking back. But I will say something that it's interesting how like nostalgia comes back, because Steven Spielberg's movies were very nostalgic, and now our nostalgia is his nostalgia. Like, if you look at
that's crazy.
That first few minutes of Jurassic World they put out, the new one, there's they're at a drive-in. A T-Rex shows up at a drive-in that's showing, like, I can't remember what the movies are now, but they're like, they're old movies. And in the drive-in is a bunch of like college-age kids and high schoolers. And it's like, well, that's not, you're now pulling from somebody else's memory. Same thing with the new Ghostbusters. That Ghostbusters doesn't take place in a small, it takes place in the present, but that small town's not a now small town. That's a 50s small town. That's a small town from 30 years before the original Ghostbusters.
Well, I've always thought it was kind of it's kind of funny that when you, in our minds, you know, people will say, you know, if you're going to a costume party, like what's 80s clothes? What's 70s clothes? Right.
Right.
It's not like it turned 1980 and the clothes changed from 79.
Right.
But like this is an 80s. This is what you did in the 70s. This is what you did in the 80s. Like, and also very likely on your wall, if you're in the 90s, you have things on there from the 80s, but yep, that would be confusing to audiences. So like, you got to stick with all 90s stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Our images for these decades always become like watered down and oversimplified to like 10 trends. Mm-hmm. So the 80s is like leg warmers and neon and new wave music and big hair and shoulder pads. And like, that's it. Like that defined the 80s, when really it was like, it's 10 years of life. It was thousands and millions of things made up what the 80s in America were. And so, yeah, it's always this like very oversimplified and watered down and like sort of heightened version of what any of these eras were. And we're always reinventing it and reimagining it. It's just like every time you remember something, you're not remembering the original event. You're remembering the last time you remembered it. And it's the same thing with cultural memory. Like, we're not remembering the 80s. We're remembering all the pop culture that's been reinventing the 80s since the 80s.
Yeah. Right? And that was something like the Americans did that was very, the FX show, the Americans, like when it came to like the cars on the street, they were like, they were specifically like, well, it can't just be 80s cars because most people have their cars for a decade or more. So it's got to be from the 70s, from the 60s. Like, that's what these cars would be actually in this time.
And it's not all cars that necessarily like read the 80s. Like, there are cars that look 80s to us, but there are also cars that like Oldsmobiles that look the same for 30 years. Yeah. And so it's just like, there would have been a mix on the street of all of that stuff.
So before we go, one last question from Leonard Kim.
What is it?
He says, I had to follow up with him on this. He says, "What DCOM would you want to have a remake or a sequel? I know. It feels like a sinner crime. So DCOM is Disney Channel original movie.
You didn't know that, DJ?
I didn't know that.
I knew that.
Oh well, wow, okay. So I'm the idiot in this one. I apologize.
DCOM, of course.
Yeah, Disney Channel original movie.
Like, you don't even like Brink. I can't believe it. <yet. laughs>
Yeah, I can't even, honestly, I don't know if I could pull a Disney Channel original movie from my brain.
Are you being serious, DJ?
Is the one with the dad from, nope, I'm sorry.
There are a lot with a dad.
Sometimes
the dad's from somewhere.
There's a dad from a sitcom that I cannot remember that is not Sister Sister, but for a second in my brain it was Sister Sister, but it's not though, and now I can't remember what sitcom it is.
I wish I could help you.
But it's a superhero one.
I simply don't know.
No, so we're rebooting a Disney Channel original movie. What you got?
Most of these were after I was like a man already for this trend.
Yeah, so that's like, the thing is like Disney Channel original movies were more my sister's thing than my thing.
Yeah, well, like in the 80s, they did have some, but they're not, I don't think those are officially on the like DCOM list.
I think
that started in like the late 90s. I think they were more like original Disney movies that they just like put on TV rather than opening them theatrically. Like, you know,
this is an embarrassment from both of you guys.
I mean, I can name some, like I know Halloween Town is one.
Boom, just, there
like,
it is.
It wasn't
Let's
my
reboot
personal
it.
Favorite, you know?
So, okay. The creepiest one of all of them. Do you guys remember Don't Look Under the Bed?
No.
Oh my God.
Wait, no, hold on.
I'm looking it up.
Hold on.
That was from 1999. I was in college, Roxy.
Doesn't matter.
I will pull this. Okay. One of the Disney Channel original movies I remember like played a little bit with slasher convention, and there was one where like a knife ended up in a garbage disposal and it was like going around and like a person's head was being put towards it. And I remember being like, this is a Disney Channel movie? Is that Don't Look Under the Bed?
No.
Okay.
Listen, don't
look
at it. Really scary. Like, this was like Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark kind of scary, but scarier with the boogeyman and the boogeyman under the bed. That's where it comes from. It was so creepy. And I really feel like that one you could bring back and it would be fire. The Halloween Town movies are the best DCOMs, but it's really hard to remake those because they just have such a twinkle in their eyes still. Right. And you don't want to mess with the...
They just made one, right? They just did like a mummy one. Under Wraps, it's called. Yes. They just did their first like remake of a DCOM that like is now new again. And they called it Under Wraps. It's about like kids who bring back a mummy.
I think I vaguely remember the original. And now that you're saying that.
Oh, yeah, you know what one I pick is Cheetah Girls because my friend Rupak was in the third one.
There you go. Cheetah Girls. That was a Raven.
Are you serious right now that Cheetah Girls was a DCOM? Yeah. I don't remember that. Girls, Cheetah Sisters.
Cheetah Girls franchise, I believe, debuted as Disney Channel original films, I believe.
Sing it with me now, Lon. We stick together.
That was a Raven Simone vehicle, right? Cheetah Girls?
Yeah. Yes. So good. But
the Cheetah Girls One like World features
None
my
of
friend
like each other anymore. There's a lot of Cheetah Girl drama. You guys haven't been keeping up with it. It's been a whole problem.
But you could like Girls Five Eva, the Cheetah Girls. That's a show waiting to happen.
It's tough. Johnny Tsunami. That one was excellent too.
Was it
Cadet Kelly? Y'all seen Cadet Kelly?
My family watched Cadet Kelly when that came out.
Cadet Kelly was awesome. That was the Christy Carlson Romano, Hillary Duff one.
Yes.
Literally, I was not even living at home anymore to be watching these with my family. I was like a man with an apartment at this point.
Oh my God, Get a Clue. I'm looking at a whole list. You guys missed out. I'm going to make a list for you guys.
Please do. Please do. Kayla Marie in the chat is trying to pitch Sky High.
Oh, you know what?
Sky
Cadet
High.
Kelly. I thought Cadet, I'm looking this up with Hillary Duff. I have seen this movie. I thought that was a theatrical movie.
Well, Look at the Irish. Look at the Irish was. Fire.
Well, speaking of that, the Lon in the chat, Kayla Marie is trying to pitch Sky High, but I do believe Sky High was a theatrical.
Sky High was definitely a theatrical movie. Yes.
We have the answer. I know the answer.
What's the answer?
I forgot about this one. Do you guys remember Smart House?
Vaguely.
Okay, Smart House was about like and picture this back in this must have been the early 90s. There's a house that's a smart house. Now we call them smart houses.
Yes.
It's like a smartphone and it talks to you and all the stuff. It does all the stuff, but the house like turns against them. It's wild. We could make this into a crazy horror movie today. It's actually happening to us.
Pierce Brosnan did one of these, right? There was a Netflix movie where Pierce Brosnan was the voice of like a house that was like an AI house that went crazy.
Don't yuck my yum, Lon.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it's a good idea they did it.
Don't ruin this.
It's such a good idea that it happened.
Don't ruin this with your Pierce Brosnans.
Are you guys understanding where my soul is or no?
Yes.
Tau. T-A-U it was called. It's like an AI house that goes crazy. And I'm wrong. It's not Pierce Brosnan. It's Gary Oldman is the voice of the evil house.
Wow.
Oh.
For some reason, I feel like Gary Oldman's a bigger pull for this evil house scenario.
You're right. I don't know why I switched him with Pierce Brosnan.
If anything, I thought you were going to be like, it wasn't Pierce Brosnan. It was Timothy Dalton. I was like, yeah, that tracks.
I know why I did it. Because the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, where they do this, that evil house is voiced by Pierce Brosnan. That's why I did it.
Saying is, Roxy, your Smart House pitch has a lot of legs. Who was the? I'm blanking on the name. I'm blanking on the name. The lady who was the Smart House. She's the. You all are going to hate me because I should be just to be able to pull the name. She was Sons of Anarchy, Married with Children.
Katie Siegel.
Bingo. Yeah. She was Smart House. You could bring her back.
Yeah.
Sure. You guys really have some watching to do. I think that this is a really important time for you guys to start your DCOM love.
Honestly, I'm sure there are dudes doing this. It's like a good podcast idea for like two older dudes who were too old for them to go back and watch all the DCOMs.
All the DCOM movies. Oh my
God.
Did
you see Brink or you didn't see Brink?
No, I haven't seen. I see Cadet Kelly. I don't know why. It must have been a video store thing. Like I was working in the video store. We put it on or something. There's no good reason for me to have seen that.
And I tried to learn there was like a Cadet Kelly, like you swing and do the, I tried to learn it.
I definitely thought that was a theatrically released film though.
No, it was not. Sure. That was a Disney Plus one. Hey, you know, maybe we could reboot Even Stevens. Listen, Shia LaBeouf, you know, he's going through some stuff. Let's give a new Even Stevens.
I think you're recasting.
100%. We're starting from scratch. We're giving a new generation. And I just want to check. Oh, yeah. So, you, Roxy, you threw out Johnny Tsunami. Is it the grandfather or the uncle or the dad? Whatever. The mentor figure in that is Shang Tsung from the Mortal Kombat movies. Cary Hiroyuki Tagawa, who is great. He is fantastic in those films. But that's it for our episode today. Lon, remind the kids at home where they can find you.
Oh, just follow me on Twitter at LONS. That's the best place to keep up. I'll let you know there all the other crap I'm working on. I don't have to repeat.
So that's fine. That's it for our episode today. Please go check out Lon Stuff. Lon, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
If you want the rest of the episode, the after show where Roxy and I are talking about The Expanse, Hawkeye, West Side Story, Love Island, a whole bunch of other stuff, you can go check that
louder,
out.
DJ.
Love Island.
Look out for that.
Morning show, all that stuff. You can check that out on patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. As always, please... I was going to say like and subscribe. I guess that's true. Like and subscribe and share and 5-star reviews. Roxy, what are you doing? Where should the kids look for you online?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer, when also the world rolls. Those are my two.
Those are the two. You can find me at DJ Talk Trash. You can find the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter.
You ain't got the vowels from stupid.
We're getting near the end of the year, everybody. So stay tuned. We got some fun stuff planned. And we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.